This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Tima Alves-Daly, and we are back to review the second part of the 2024 F1 Academy season. Joining me to do this is none other than Mr. Jesse Billington and Miss Ellie Mae Taylor. How are you both?
I'm doing all right. I've had an exciting day, been working on a very fun shoot with my normal day job, and got to experience the new MG Cyberster in launch control mode, which is quite fun and surprisingly brutal for a two-ton car on gravel as well. Two-ton electric sports car, still not entirely sold on the concept, but that's getting besides the point. Ellie Mae, how are you?
I've had a non-eventful day. Quite, just not exciting at all, but you know, I'm good, thank you.
We'll take it, we'll definitely take it. Yeah, probably somewhere in the middle, not been driving around in a two-ton electric car, but not having too quiet a day either, so I'm going to be Goldilocks and find it just right for a change, I think. Obviously, we're here to talk about F1 Academy, though, but before we do get to that, we do have some news, which seems more related to F1 Academy and women in motorsports in general, and we'll kick things off, Jesse, with IndyCar.
Yeah, with some good women in motorsport news, and this is Jamie Chadwick has been testing in IndyCar. Of course, she competed in Indy Next this year, and she's been testing for the big league, running with Andretti Steele, who have been a very good support to her through her Indy Next campaign, and she's now given them a sort of test in the top tier, and we haven't seen any data from it, as usual, with sort of private tests and the like, but, I mean, it's a good step forward. It's the sort of thing we want to see. It's a feeder series, sort of offering opportunities for its drivers to move up to the next rank, which is very much the concept. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the opportunities it should bring for her. And on the face of it, her season in the Indy feeder series hasn't looked great if you were to just take the sort of bare results, but there has been a lot of external factors that have ruined her runs, but there have also been some absolutely stellar performances. So I think when you look at it properly, she's had a very good season and I'd say she's certainly worthy of an IndyCar seat, and given some of the talent that seemed to float around the bottom end of the IndyCar pool, I think she's certainly worthy of it, and it'd be really nice to see her make the full step up to the big league.
I'll take this as a very easy way for me to plug the upcoming episode of the Across the Pond Sports Network podcast, where we review the IndyCar season, where I do lay into some of those drivers at the bottom of the field that you and I very much know who I'm talking about. As for Jamie, I could see her getting a seat in 26 if she doesn't next year. Ruby Foster obviously dominated the championship in Indy Next this year and is also with Andretti, and as a result of winning, had $1 million to help him get a seat. So naturally, I think deserved first bite to the apple and has now obviously taken that as he'd be racing for Ray Hall, Letterman Lanigan Racing next year. But the path now is potentially clearer for Jamie. Obviously, if you look at it from a broad perspective, there is that marketability there that none of the other drivers have, which presents a really unique opportunity there and would look great on the face of it. And I think, as much as you say about the season not being all there, it has been pretty decent once you delve into details a little bit. And I think, obviously, it's quite easy to dismiss some of the results, but like you say, bad luck in DNF, such as in Alabama and Nashville, for example, prevented her from scoring some valuable points. But she did get on the podium and did absolutely dominate that race in Road America. And in the end, was only 22 points off P4, which does sound weird. But the top three were a weird class of their own, class of their own, class of their own, respectively. So this would have made her essentially the best of the rest. And 22 points in the grand scheme of things over the course of a season is not very much, especially in Indy Next. So I'm glad that Andretti said, we'll give you a test if you do well. We like to reward good driving. And that's exactly what they did. And hopefully that means that she can get that boost up into a seat next year. There's still plenty of seats available. So fingers crossed there. You got any thoughts on Jamie in IndyCar for next year, anyway?
I mean, I think you summed it up pretty well. I think she's got what it takes to be an IndyCar. I'd love to see her reach it. Like you said, I think she's got the talent there, especially when you look at some of the people that are in it this year.
Yes. Don't bait me again. I will if you ask me to, but don't make me.
A different podcast.
A different podcast at a different time.
Yeah, American time. So we've got to tune in differently. But we've also got some very good other news, but from Formula E anyway.
It's sort of more Jamie Chadwick news in a way.
A little bit, yes.
Because, I mean, if you missed the news, Formula E has basically announced that they're having an all-female pre-season testing session on the 7th of November at Ricardo Tormo Circuit in Valencia in Spain. And each female will complete a half-day testing session, but they'll also take part in media activities such as press conferences, meet briefings and interviews to help raise their profile within motorsport. Each team are required to put at least one female into the cockpit, but they have been encouraged to fill both seats within the teams, as Formula E will be using some of that data collated over the testing session to create more gender-neutral car technology to give females better and a more equal racing experience, as at the moment, most motorsport and automotive designs are designed to the male body. The full list of female drivers is due to be announced in coming weeks. No doubt it'll be the day after we release this podcast. But as we said, Jamie Chadwick should be doing it. We don't quite know who it's with. But we also have, or some of the drivers that have already been announced as current and future F1 Academy backed McLaren drivers, Bianca Bustamante and Ella Lloyd for McLaren. Alicia Pomalski and Envision's test and development driver Alice Powell will drive for Envision Racing, and Chloe Chambers and Nerea Marti will run for Andretti. They will not also be the only females on track that day, however, as under FIA Girls on Track, 400 local females will be given the opportunity to watch and interact with the female races throughout the day, as well as participating in various workshops. So I think this is a great initiative by Formula E all around. It'll give women more exposure to the series and a greater opportunity in the future to hopefully see a few of them actually race in it.
I really like the drivers that have been announced so far, because for me, Nerea Marti, Chloe Chambers, they both thoroughly deserve it. And they both had F3 tests as well up to this point. So I'd like to see Nerea in either category next year. She's someone who has just always been there and just needs that extra boost, I think. And hopefully Formula E Test can provide that for her. Alice Powell, would be good to see her back in the car. From a purely logical point of view, it's a little curious, but I think the reasoning here is that she's got prior experience racing generally, obviously, but then obviously as well in Formula E machinery. So I wonder if this is a way for the team to get more experienced data, a bit like Tatiana Calderon helping develop the new F3 cars and make them more female-friendly in that respect. Alicia, for me, is one that's quite interesting. She's got the potential, I think, to be Britain's next big export. Her career has been pretty good so far. She started karting when she was 15, I believe, moved into GB4, where she was vice champion this year. She got 3 wins, 11 podiums, 16 top fives, and a whole lot of bits and pieces. And she's only 18. So that's quite an exciting thing for her. Maybe she turns up in F1 Academy next year. Maybe she gets a reserve driver role with Formula E somewhere. And there's talk that, I think this was confirmed ages ago, or the test itself was actually announced, that Marta Garcia would be in with ERT, which should have been rebranded as of today to, I think, or was it Chemo or something like that? That's not Chemo, that's not right, is it?
Chemo, no, that's, maybe that's something you. Like that.
That's something with a K that's American owned anyway. That's going to be awkward. That's going to be a bit Jesse uses for the podcast. But I like that there's more investment coming in that way, especially for a driver like Marta to get that. So there's a lot of potential there, and I'd be intrigued to see who else, because I was not necessarily as across Alicia as I was on other drivers, so I'm quite looking forward to see who we get from other next of the woods, essentially. It's a little bit like, who do we get on the rest of the grid for F1 Academy next year, now that a bunch of the drivers have to leave because the mandated 2 years being up. It's going to be quite interesting to see there, I think. Which Unless you've got anything you want to add there, Jesse, leads into a really nice
I
segue
mean,
for me, so.
there's a few other sort of potential runners that are sort of touted to be joining this field. It hasn't been wholly confirmed yet. Abby Pulling is potentially going to be running with Nissan for this. Sophia Flörsch as well is looking at a Formula E seat, which would be great to see her given the opportunity to sort of move on from Formula 3, where it feels like she's just sort of been stuck and abandoned for quite some time. I'd like to see her finally move on to pastures new and actually start achieving and moving forwards in the nicest possible sense. Jess Edgar is rumoured to be running with DS Penske as well, which is also one on the list. And my same rumoured list was Marta Garcia with ERT, but that's now sort of been confirmed. So we'll wait for the other options to shore up. But it's a fairly sort of impressive list of drivers that's sort of peppered with some really, really hot names in it. And yeah, we've already mentioned Ella Lloyd and Chloe Chambers, and they are the first signings for Formula One Academy next year.
Which, kind of echoing what I've already said in the Formula E piece just there, I'm really happy to see those two get confirmed because they've both been excellent in their respective careers so far, especially this year. Chloe Chambers obviously being best of the rest in a lot of ways in F1 Academy, and Ella Lloyd coming in and really being an excellent wild card in these two rounds, which we'll get on to talking about in a minute. Lloyd's going to race with Roden, who's obviously the team that Abby Pulling's with this year. And Chloe Chambers is now part of the Red Bull Ford Academy program, which is quite awesome news for her. And she's already been racing with the outfit at the IMSA Mustang Challenge in Indianapolis. If you have to, I suppose. It's a hard life sometimes being a racing driver. And she finished in P9 in both races, which, 23 car field? Not too shabby at all. I mean, there's a lot of these, and again, I'm not sure if it's just they're young or if I'm just feeling old or whatever, but a lot of them is like the small women are incredibly quick. And things like Dorian as well, it's like you could be easily underestimated, going, oh, it's just a tiny person over there. And then they just zoom past, like, oh my days, how have you managed to do that? And I think Chloe James is another one of these ones where I wonder if maybe she's just small on TV. I don't know. I think she is just small though.
Chloe Chambers is one that for me has really snuck up on us as sort of like a talent, and certainly through this season of Formula One Academy sort of came into it going, oh, she'll be an interesting one to keep an eye on, and then very much proved to be an interesting one to keep an eye on because there was a lot of talent sort of waiting to come out, and she's sort of really shown it, and I'm looking forward to seeing what she's able to do next, and it'll be really quite interesting. Lloyd as well, I think, proving that those wildcard entries are a worthwhile thing to sort of get selected for and sort of get the chance to show off your talent if you show off well. And obviously it's getting noticed because she's now sort of been signed on and is ready to go for next year. She's signed with McLaren as well as one of their drivers.
So when she had this announcement, she was like, you're joining the development program, you're doing the Formula E test, you're doing your Formula Academy next year. You're like, damn, 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 that's great.
We have
this conversation all the
once,
time, the three ping, of ping. Us. The three of us always have the conversation about the amount of feeder series that we want to watch, but we just don't have the time for. So you just try and keep an eye on people occasionally that keep your mind on that. And she's been one of these people where I've been aware of her in the background here, and she's been cooking away like a really good Sunday roast in the background for the last couple of years, and now she's actually being able to show us what she's capable of. And I was like, oh, this was definitely worth the wait. Eddie, maybe you had something.
Yeah, I was just gonna sort of say exactly what you were saying. I mean, Ella Lloyd, she's got
Sunday roast analogy and all.
Yeah,
she's a British driver, it's a fitting thing.
Yeah, I mean, she's second in the Ginetta GT Championships last year. She's achieved sort of female driver trophy several times in the Formula Winter Series. And in her first year in British F4 this year, she's already achieved 3 second places and a third. It's not bad going.
Not at all.
Especially when you look at how packed that British F4 field has been this year. It's been a proper tumultuous season. And if you're able to sort of really make your way to the top, that's something good. And equally, it's a sort of a show as to where those talent scouts are. If you look at sort of where McLaren have obviously sort of had their eye on the ball. And then, of course, I think the F1 Academy sort of wildcard slot really cemented their possible ideas. But it shows that they're out there and looking, and they're looking in more and more diverse places, which is what we want to see, I think. Timo, you look like you're about to have an idea.
No, don't worry, nothing as dangerous as that. I was just thinking it was a little bit amusing, perhaps, that F1 Academy didn't have a wildcard driver in Spain, but then as a counter to it, Formula E says, right, 400 of your local girls could come and interact with everything going on here. And I was like, it'd have been funnier if that was F1 Academy, because then it's obviously trying to make up for something, but it's Formula E instead. So like, I see what you didn't do there. We're going to go really overboard in the other direction.
It feels a little pointed and a bit of a missed opportunity from Formula One Academy, but that is a perfect
That's a
thing
good segue for
yeah,
you there.
it's as good a segue as I'm going to sort of try and manufacture, because they've really dropped the ball with the car this year. And I think
F1 Academy, we should
F1
point
Academy
out,
this
that
is
about
yeah.
to tear into, not Formula E.
The cars for the series are properly useless. They're a long way adrift of being close to the power and pace of the series above. So the result is you end up with this huge step up expected from drivers going from Formula One Academy to the likes of Freca or Formula 3. There's just no real equivalence to the car's ability. And it's often regarded that Formula 2 to Formula 1 is a huge gulf. The power step up is massive. The technology involved is huge. But the F1 Academy cars to F3 and the like is also a huge step. And it's not setting up these drivers for the smoothest of transitions, considering that's what it's designed to do. And yeah, they're badly designed and they struggle to race well. They suffer horridly in the dirty air of one another, so much so that sometimes if you actually get a toe, you can find yourself losing speed in a straight line, which is somehow the opposite of what happens with nearly every other racing vehicle. The setups of the cars and the pliancy seem to be overly rigid, something that really came to the fore in Singapore, where the cars were...
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Bouncing a lot and really struggle to find grip on the harsh surface. And the terrible aero package means that trying to switch on tyres was tricky. And while it definitely separated the wheat from the chaff, it made the race significantly lopsided. You had those who were able to get away, able to put in the pace, and able to make the tyres actually work versus those who might have suffered off the start and then immediately it snowballs into a problem. The Formula 2 cars haven't been without their issues this year, but they are quite raceable and have provided some good wheel-to-wheel action. They've provided a relatively stable platform, and they are a new design this year. Formula 1 Academy was a new design of car, but it just hasn't seen anything like that. And I think it deserves a big overhaul going into next season to provide more powerful, better handling machinery that's more tractable and more akin to the line of progression expected for the drivers. It's unfair on the drivers to expect them to show off their best talents when they're spending the entire time fighting their machinery. Especially with next season, we've got the Formula 3 car taking a step forward. That gulf is likely to be widened, and it just seems a little unfair that we're sort of going, we're going to give you this brand new series and make you fight with one hand tied behind your back the entire time, because it's not going to be a completely parsimonious step up that we're really offering you. So, yeah.
I think the biggest issue for me is that it's hindering how well these women can develop their single-seater skills, as this is meant to provide them with access sort of further up the ladder, but they're missing out on vital skills like wheel-to-wheel racing, where it's more of a procession at the minute. And if these women are to progress up to the higher formulas, they haven't been able to hone in on that type of racecraft, and that leaves them then vulnerable and at a disadvantage if they were then to go into series like F3 or go into Formula E, Indy Next, IndyCar, etc. It's good that F1 Academy are putting more women in the spotlight and giving them more opportunities, but it also isn't good enough. If we actually want to change the number of women in motorsport, then they can't do it with, as you said, one hand tied behind their back.
If you look at qualifying positions and finishing positions, often they're relatively unchanged throughout a race. You can sort of discount a few people for spins or incidents, but beyond that, often it is very much the order you qualify in is going to be pretty damn near the order you finish in, which isn't really a race. We've bemoaned Formula One for years for having that exact thing of the cars being sort of a bit too rubbish for racing. And now we're seeing that happen to the feeder series, which previously have always been a hotbed of action and this sort of opportunity for drivers to show off the fact that you can go wheel to wheel. And now we've just got literally an academy version of Formula One at its worst.
It's one of those annoying things, I think, for me to echo what Ellie May said there, and that when it was announced that F1 Academy was happening and it was essentially taking over from W Series, you thought, well, finally we'll get some good cars, because we had problems with the W Series cars as well for the exact sort of same reasons, and then they just didn't do that. And like, you had the opportunity, and it's a bit frustrating because I know that take Formula E in this current generation, for example, gets a lot of complaints from people all over the place saying it's more of a peloton style race, which I absolutely hate as a phrase, but there we go. But at least you get a lot of kind of strategic thinking in overtaking that way, and it's a different form of racing in that sense, so you do get to hone your skills, whereas this way you kind of don't even get the opportunity to try and do that, it doesn't feel like at times. Mm-hmm. And like you say, it does seem a bit positional. I think the other main problem that they have is that obviously the which can be solved by improving the cars, is that you watch the coverage and they do the wide shots of the circuit or the grandstands or whatever, and there's barely anyone there watching in person in these countries. And it's like, it's all well and good going to race in Saudi Arabia, but what's the point if no one's actually there getting themselves on seats to watch this? Because it's not got an alluring enough aspect to it. And I think they need to really work on that, which is kind of for the same reason, like, why did you not broadcast it live last year for its inaugural season? Why did that take as long as it did? You're already filming it anyway. So I think those two issues are the main issues for it. But I think if they can solve the cars, then they can solve the crowds.
Mm. A rare thing for me to say now. I will give W Series credit where it was due.
I thought you were going to agree with me.
Well, that I do agree with you on, but for W Series, the cars were good. The problem it had were the tyres, and they ran Hankooks, which are the same as what I believe Formula E has run for the past few seasons, and they are widely regarded as truly useless tyres. Formula One Academy at least runs Pirellis, but the problem is the actual car is terrible. So we've sort of shifted from, we've now got good tyres, but terrible chassis. If we are somehow able to combine previous W Series chassis, they were Tortoise F4s with
just
decent
give them
tires.
The current F3 cars, because they're getting rid of those and they're perfectly good, and we'll just give those to F1 Academy.
You've only got to look at the final two laps of this year's Formula 3 finale to realise just how good those cars actually are. So yeah, give them to the talented racing drivers we've got lined up and let's see what they can do. Anyway, into the actual racing itself, and we pick up where we left off, which was of course Zandvoort.
Which was interesting to start off with, at least, because we did get mixed conditions in qualifying, which didn't really stop Abbey Pulling and Dorian Pan from doing what they normally do anyway, but at least added a bit more jeopardy into it. We did see Anurag Kubica spin just after turn 4 and Bustamante crash to the same spot that Ricciardo and Piastri did in 2023. Luckily, possibly due to the cars themselves, no broken hands this time. Abbey Pulling claimed pole position for the first race, Dorian Pan for the second race. And for me, Neri Marti in P3, Orly Nobles in P5, and Gaidman in P6 as the wildcard for that weekend were the other standout drives in these conditions, especially Gaidman, because again, wildcard coming in, learning everything on the fly, getting inside the top 10 immediately against drivers that have been there for the most part. This would be their second season, not too bad at all there. But then a little bit like we've been talking about there with the racing, the first race itself, there wasn't a lot to it because it was meant to happen on the Saturday, then got aborted due to the weather and the teams and everything. Did lead to some fun team radios, but that was about all we got. And then it was Sunday morning that we actually got the race, with a number of drivers being put under investigation for a false start, with Dorian Pan and Amaral Kubica receiving 5-second penalties as a result, which, as we've alluded to with the cars, once you get one of those or you have to do a pit stop, you need something really calamitous to happen in the race for you to be able to catch back up and to then even gain positions after that. So that was kind of them a little bit awkward there on that one. Race was shortened to 13 laps. Pulling did what Pulling does and dominated. Pan finished second on track, but obviously due to penalty, finished in P5. So luckily he didn't have to kind of come in and stop and serve that, which would have been extra harsh, I think, on top of it. But again, we see this with penalties all the time across all the series where they seem a little bit unreasonable for no apparent reason. And I think for me, you two feel free to jump in if there was something else that stood out for you in the race, but for me it was Hendrick basically versus Leah Block for P8 over the last two laps of the race. It was just one of those rare instances in this season of close wheel-to-wheel racing between as much of an experienced driver and a rookie as we can get in this kind of category. So I did like that battle there. And Gaidman again for me, E4 was where she finished, so that was incredibly impressive for me. So at that point, the best wildcard driver we'd had so far this season, and continues to be, actually.
Yeah, I think it's really good when you've got these sort of talented wildcards coming in, and what it's doing is it's also opening up people to watch these other feeder series that they already exist, and Gaidman, of course, coming from a few other backgrounds. So if you look at her and go, oh, that's interesting, I'll keep an eye on her, and you start watching these other series, you see the other talents that float around, and it is very much a case of a rising tide lifts all boats, and this is the sort of thing we wanted to see from Formula One Academy. But yeah, Hamda versus Leah was an incredible little battle pulling away there, and it was, yeah, really impressive, because of course Hamda now in her second season of this sport, and she's done a bit of racing before. Bear in mind, this is Leah's first time ever really sort of properly racing single-seater race cars, and she's had a huge turnaround in this sort of latest section of the season. I think we'll definitely get onto that towards the end of the podcast when we look back at the drivers that have stood out, but this was very much sort of the start of the change for her, and a really impressive one at that. So it was a good sort of return to the series as we sort of return to Zandvoort, and yeah, I think it was a good series of results overall.
And I think we've just been talking about how it's, you know, really hard to overtake, but the one person you always seem to see overtaking and having those battles is Hamda Arkabasi.
Yes, very much so. It's kind of, she might not always get the results she wants, but she's going to damn well try and get there. And you've got to admire that tenacity, I think. And it's almost frustrating that Hamda's not there, up there with her all the time, because you know that if Hamda's ahead of her, you'll get an even more feisty Hamda as a result, because of the sibling rivalry. I'm going to stick with you, Elime, for a second, though, because I want to get your thoughts on this one. We were just saying about the time penalties for false starts in race one. Then in race two, Gaidman got a 10-second time penalty for overtaking Nobles, which supposedly for pushing off track slightly due to contact down turn 12, which is that little pinky, gravelly, cornery bit, which I thought was just especially harsh, even more so given that it was for Gaidman, who she's still learning at that point. She's in this for one weekend. Did that seem fair to you, or was that a bit too harsh? For, I mean, again, you saw what everyone else saw. It didn't seem like the most terrible kind of pushing someone off track you've ever seen.
I did think it was a bit harsh. I mean, at the same time, it did push Nobles off the track into the gravel. And I mean, Nobles did really well.
What did it encourage her to go off track?
Well, I mean, if she didn't sort of take the avoiding action, then they may have obviously collided. But I obviously will commend Nobles for her car control, because it did sort of launch it over the gravel a bit. But I think, like you said, I mean, again, if we take into account, it's really hard to overtake. And you know, you've got to just try. And as well, she, like you said, she hasn't, you know, that was her first race within F1 Academy. But at the same time, I guess you do have to then be punished if you're then hurting another driver. 10 seconds, I probably wouldn't have given. I would have given 5, just because of how close all the cars are up to each other. If it happened in Formula One, 10 seconds isn't as bad, but 5 seconds can really push you down the order. But at the same time, she still finished in P10. She still got points.
Yeah, which is why she's still quite impressive for me there as an overall weekend performance. But you're mentioning F1 there, Jesse. We've seen this in there as well, where you try and a slightly outlandish overtake that isn't even that outlandish as we've seen in yesteryear. We've been watching F1 for a number of years now. We're going to specify the exact number so we don't feel too old about it. But a lot of the drivers have been saying that they're discouraged to try some moves, kind of like Ricciardo-esque moves, if you will, where you kind of just see what happens and you know that you can control it. It's not going to be bad, but it feels like it's discouraging drivers from early on now to even think about making those moves. Because again, if you compare that to some of the things we've seen other drivers get away with perfectly well in Formula 3, for example, you look at Solov a couple of years ago in any other race and he gets away perfectly fine with it. And yet this is somehow not okay. I think it's just, again, the inconsistency smacks for me.
That's it. For me, it's the inconsistency. I think if you're going to punish, punish fairly and punish with consistency across the board. I think you can't punish because you say, oh, well, if we give them a 10-second penalty, that'll affect them this way. If we give them a 5-second penalty, that'll affect them this way. Then you start to get into sort of race fixing and sort of trying to sort of predicate a result from a race, as it were. Yeah, that never tends to go well, especially if your name's Michael Massey. But I... I think ultimately a level of consistency of stewarding across the board when it comes to Formula One, Formula Two, Formula Three, F1 Academy would be the solution to this, because that way also, as you're racing through these categories, you're racing with the same sort of consistency of, okay, if I do that, this will happen regardless of what I'm racing in or where I'm racing. That will be my punishment. Not a case of, oh, well, I can get away with it because we've got the stakes at the back, so they're only going to give me a 5-second penalty so I don't drop behind the stakes. Then, and it's going to be really bad if they give me a 10-second penalty so I finish behind Bottas or something. There's got to be that sort of level to it. And equally, at the same time, we're expecting these drivers to be performing at their very best. And even if you are the wild card driver, that doesn't mean you get to drive like a wild child. There should be some level of professionalism to it as well. You can't just go, oh, we'll let them off because they're the lowest rung of the feeder series. They're still learning. No, they're only going to learn if you can't push someone off track or you can't open the only door to them being through the gravel and just let them off because, well, they're still learning. I think parity and fairness across the penalty system is arguably the best result they can expect for this. And yeah, it's, I think, unfortunate.
This is where we bring in Mark Webber's solution to track limits and seeing how far drivers can put other people, when he made the suggestion of just putting a brick wall at turn four in Bahrain when Verstappen and Hamilton were battling in 2021 to stop them going over track limits and arguing all the time. So, like, just put a brick wall there, they won't go off then.
Yeah, you don't get track limit issues at Monaco. There's your solution.
Exactly.
Anyway, end of the race.
Yeah, the rest of the race was pretty decent, I thought. I mean, for F1 Academy, and I hate to say it like that, but again, we're limited in what kind of action we get in some ways here. This is constructive criticism that we mean it as. As you were saying earlier anyway, if there's a battle going on, Hamdrucker basically is usually involved, and she was early on in a good battle with Gateman, Nobles, and Shrine not being too far behind. That was quite nice to see, but then things did settle down a bit after that. Lauren Pan dominated that race, slightly less dominant than Pulling, but dominant nonetheless, which is not too surprising either. Maya Vogt up there again, she claimed P2, and Pulling never far away, P3. It's going to be fun to see her season by the time we get to the end of the season, see what her worst result of the year is going to be. It's going to be probably. I was doing this when we were reviewing Indy Next the other week, and I was like, Louis Foster, he had one bad performance, and I'm like, oh, it's that one P19 that really buggers up your average, because everything else was about, I think, top five was everything else.
Yeah.
I was like, that's really unfortunate. Yeah, as you said, Gaiman managed to get in P10 despite all of that, which, when you're ahead of drivers like Manroca Basie, Emily DeHoyes, Chloe Chambers, and Bianca Bustamante, who have been there for a lot longer, even with that penalty, you're going to take a great amount of pride in getting that one point, especially when you're not going to get to race for the rest of the season. And how you do here is probably where you're going to be in the championship, maybe, and that's all you can really do for it. So I think that's going to be fun to see who she finishes above by the end of the season. I don't think it's going to be exclusively other wildcard drivers.
Well, she's in 13th. Coming out of Singapore, she's in P13, so she's above Lovan Foss, Amna Alkabasi, and Emily DeHoosh, who are the other full-timers. And then, of course, you've got Lloyd, Crone, and Jafali behind her as well. So she's not done too badly off of this sort of single performance. At the end of the Zandvoort weekend, she had made it up to, she was essentially P12. So a pretty good sort of one-off stint there.
I do quite like the wildcard drivers. I'll be intrigued to see who we get for the last couple of rounds. But anyway, Singapore up next. And I think we're probably on the agreement that this was the best round of the season so far as a whole.
Yeah, I think Singapore was a little bit spicier. I think we definitely saw this when W Series came here as well. It is just one of those tracks that, because of its unique status, its unique nature, the walls are close, it's incredibly hot. You're racing at odd times. The cars don't really like it. It's a bit of a push for the drivers as well. It really sort of forces the sort of chaos into a race. And that's where you really get the sort of the proper cream rise to the top again, is when you get those challenging conditions, as we saw with the rain and the changing conditions in Zandvoort. Singapore brings its own set of unique circumstances that really sort of will torment a driver. And this, I think, case in point was what we saw, is why we got these fantastic battles through the weekend.
And Leah Block.
And Leah Block as well. Genuinely a huge and very impressive, well-earned surprise from her. I think we'll definitely get to that in due course.
Yeah, Leah Block, man. Anyway, there was frustration, though, because Bustamante in particular, she's been having a difficult second part of this season for a few reasons, one of which not being helped. I was trying to be nice. Yes, but definitely not helped by incidents like this happening where she missed a grid slot after the formation lap. Happens from time to time. We see that across all categories. Made the grid do another formation lap as a result. But then she got a 10-second stop-go penalty, which is a little harsh, I think. But she only got that because team didn't bring her in at the end of the second formation lap. Because if you miss your grid spot, you then come in, you start from the pit lane. That's in the rule book. Didn't do that. And you wonder, it's like Pan back in Saudi Arabia going and racing for an extra lap, and no one telling her on the team radio that the race is over, you can stop now. But where are the people on the radio telling her to not do this? And it seems that, yeah, her race was essentially ruined from there because what she's supposed to do with that afterwards. So that was a bit of a shame for me. And then more false starts. Dorian Pan again getting a 5-second penalty for another false start. It's a real shame, especially for Lloyd, because she'd been running up in P5 up to that point, which again for a wildcard driver coming in on a, as you said, Jeffrey, very unique and technical circuit as Singapore is mightily impressive. Bringing her sixth victory of the year, Wogan P2, and oh, you wish Lia Vok could have just been a smidge quicker because Pin was able to keep hold of P3 by 0.2 seconds, thanks to Block just falling back far enough for a while on the final lap, which you'd be kicking yourself a little bit because you'd be happy with P4 if you're Lia Vok, but also that podium's that bloody close. That's got to irk you a little bit, though.
Little bit. I'm really starting to think there's something going on in the water with F1 Academy because the amount of false starts we're seeing, it just seems a little bit high. I just don't quite know what's going on, whether there's something to do with the clutch systems that means that the cars are sort of bleeding clutch pressure on the line, and that's where we're seeing these cars edging forwards. Because it's not like they're dumping the clutch early, it's just cars creeping. So it's again, this begs the question that I don't think professional racing drivers like Dorian Parra, who is a genuinely incredible talent, is going to be jumping starts with quite this regularity. And it's the fact that it seems to be nearly sort of every other weekend or every other race, we're seeing Dorian Parra 5-second penalty for a jump start. And you're sort of going, that's a bit odd. But I'm
It's like
beginning to
she's
think.
almost accepted she's not going to be pulling, so she decided to just make the racing trickier for herself by having a false start and going, let's see if I can still do this with
I
a
don't think it's
5-second
that. I
penalty.
genuinely think it is the terrible nature of these cars, the fact that you cannot hold them on the clutch at a race start without the clutch pressure bleeding out, and the result is
Somehow,
you
I didn't
start to
think it was
creep.
my option, really.
Yeah, I genuinely think there is a more significant factor at play here because I cannot think of another series that has this many false starts in it, pretty much week in, week out.
We've not invented the series yet.
No, we
And as
will.
well, if you look at the onboards when they then do the replay, you can hardly even see that they're even
Oh, yeah.
jumping the start. I mean, you've got I can't remember who did the Netherlands, but we had Alex Brundle doing Singapore, and they can't, these are drivers with that have raced and are race at like high levels, and they can't even see that they're jump starting.
Yeah, it when it's baffling your experienced racing driver commentators and it's baffling your drivers and teams, it suggests that there is possibly a more deep-rooted issue here than simply driver cannot
Well, it was,
hold
it, it
car on
was that
clutch.
thing of they've got the sensors on the track in the car that says, like, that's all well and good, but technology can mess up from time to time.
Yeah, technology's not
This is a
fallible.
pretty established thing. And it's kind of like, you should at least be able, like, again, like I was saying just now, we, and Nearly Motorsport, to be fair, we've all been, like, if you added up all the years that we've been watching motorsport and combined them, it's a number we don't want to have to deal with just now.
It's greater than three.
But, yes. But you think, okay, if we miss something, fair enough. We still haven't been doing it 24/7 for our entire lives, as some of the commentators or drivers looking at this are doing. And if they can't, so we can be forgiven for missing something, but if they then can't see it, then you've got to think there's maybe something more at play here, like you say.
And you've got to think that earlier in the year, if we go back to F1, Lando Norris had a slight jump start. But because he then stopped and then started again, they didn't give him a penalty because it actually hindered him. And if you look at Pan's first apparent jump start, she had quite a slow get off the line anyway. So you're kind of looking at that thinking, well, she
Was
hasn't gained
there net
an
gain? Yeah.
advantage
There's no lasting advantage, which is sort of the rule you play with in things like football and rugby, as you sort of say advantage play on, because there's no lasting advantage from a perceived penalty. And again, if we've got, as I theory, clutch issues across the cars because they're simply terrible, a jump start really isn't giving you a lasting advantage if you're then struggling to actually get the clutch to engage to pull away from the line. Sort of going, it's not really giving me an advantage by it, it's simply failing earlier. So it's, yeah, it's, I would love to start sort of pulling apart a car with a proper race engineer and seeing actually where these problems might lie and having a word with sort of team technical managers to find out what's going on here, because I suspect there's something more than simply a wonky timing beam. But anyway, net
it'd
result.
It'd just be nice for you to take apart a different car for a change, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I'm genuinely getting a little bit annoyed with having to constantly take apart the MG, but that's a different story for another day. Anyway, Block P4, Chambers P5, Hamder Alkabasi P6, Marty P7, Schreiner P8, Lloyd P9, nice set of points for our wildcard driver, and Houseman P10. Relatively straightforward race that sort of pretty much did what it said on the tin, and relatively speaking, was largely as the cars started in qualifying. Anyway, race two,
second race, I thought was, and I mean, you were looking like you were disagreeing with me just now when I was saying Singapore was the best round we've got this year, but then I put it to you, was this maybe the best race we've had of the year so far? Because for me, this felt like a step at least in the right direction for the kind of racing I was hoping we'd get more from F1 Academy. Or are you going to disagree?
I don't know.
We know she wants to disagree with me. Just by nature.
Well, yes, that's true.
It's a tricky one to assess because it's all spread out so far through the year. You can't really sort of remember the races we had early on because they feel like sort of 3 decades ago. You're sort of going, well, I don't know. Whereas at least with Formula 3, you sort of look at it and go, oh, well, that was a good race and that was a good race because there was enough.
Well, you struggle to remember because it all happens in such closely confined quarters. You've got the opposite problem there of trying to remember everything.
Yeah, Formula 3 all happens at once, but at least you can sort of pick out good bits. Whereas with this, you're sort of left going, was Saudi a good race? The only thing I remember from Saudi was Dorian Pan doing an extra lap after race one and then being disqualified. You're sort of like, then what happened after that? Then where did we go? It's just
I tell you what, then as Anime's not sure, I'll run her and everyone else listening through the bits of what happened. Maybe she'll come to a decision by the time I get to end of it, which is the fact that we had a great battle pretty much straight off the line between Pin and Wurg, which carried on for much of the first lap, with the latter coming out on top, which was quite nice to see for a change, because I feel like Maya's used to having to play the bridesmaid and never the bride in F1 Academy, so it was nice for her to get on top for once. We then got a bit of a stroll in Monaco moment with the coverage, because it cut just as Bustamante spun off the track at lap 3, and we had this incredibly long highlights replay of everything except what we wanted to look at in that moment, and we were wondering, what's happened there? We just missed this big crash. Is something else happened? No idea. Wasn't that dramatic in the end? The safety car did come out as a caution and bunch the field up, but it was just one of those unfortunate things for Bianca. Not a good weekend for her, especially at her home, essentially home race. But then in the restart, we got what we wanted in terms of really close racing from like P4 to P9. Houseman and Bustamante then came together in turn one, with Bustamante's rear end going airborne ever so briefly, which is not great, and Houseman getting a 10-second penalty for causing the collision. Chambers again impressing. She lined up Schreiner over a number of laps before, thought really sublimely overtaking her on lap 10, which, bear in mind, these are short races anyway, not a number of laps. You plan as much as you like, but a lot of the time you don't necessarily get the time then to execute said plan, so it was great to see her able to formulate an idea, think it through, and then execute and do it successfully, and not kind of then lose it back to Schreiner later on. And then, even though it was just outside the points, Amaral Kabasi fighting Aurelia Nobles managed to get P11 from her down to T1, which was quite nice and sublime. We know how turn one can go wrong on so many occasions. We always try not to think of immediately the Ferraris and Red Bull in Formula One, but that's one of the obvious ones. No surprises, Abby Pulling did win yet again and got the fastest lap with Maya managing to keep P2 ahead of P3. Leah Block, though, once again P4, absolutely brilliant from her. Nere Marti in P5, Pamela Alcabase in P6, Lloyd in P7, really great for her. Chambers managed to get up the way to P8 with Schreiner in P9. I don't feel like we get to say Schreiner in the top 10 too often this season, so good for her. And then De Hoys in P10. So I think, again, considering, as Jesse mentioned, the cars that we've got and all the rest of it and the short nature of the races, I think this was one of the better ones, if not, for me, the best one we've had so far. You're chomping at the bit, I can tell, already, mate. You may have thought of some things.
No.
No, you just had that look on your face. Okay, Jesse,
It
please,
truly
can you
is.
take
It truly
over?
is the Teflon feeder series. It just slides off your mind, which is unfortunate because it does have some really good moments, but the rest of it, you're just
Aren't
like,
you glad I'm not editing this and dislike you enough to decide to just frame all of these and just have you as anti-women?
there is a risk of that. Thankfully, I'll probably be doing the editing on this one, but I do stand by the fact that it is a bit of a Teflon series because it is just it. Sometimes it just feels a bit of a chore to get through because you look at it and go, "Well, there they've qualified," and you could sort of put a relatively sound bet on,
That's
you
why
could
I
say,
was
it'll be
so
good
happy with
finishing
this
where they
race,
do
though, because we
because
had
it
stuff
finally gave
happening.
us something. Yeah, it finally gave us
Problem
something.
is that I feel like it wasn't from actual like racing.
We
People were sitting.
can't be begging and choosing at this point, though,
It's
anyway.
sort of like when you're looking for some actual excitement in a Formula One race, but this re entirely revolved around the idea of Romain Grosjean having a simply horrific accident in Haas to finally give you something interesting to do. You're like, it's not really racing, but finally there's something to actually
Hey, he
watch.
made Bahrain interesting. It's
Yeah,
just
but no, that's my argument, is you're waiting for there to be
a
some sort of horrific accident just to make it exciting, because ultimately, as good as the talent is, you might as well have stuck them out there in MX5 Cup cars. That would at least be more exciting.
You might not have gotten away with that one.
Ugh.
Nothing wrong with MX5 Cup.
No, that's what I'm
No,
saying. You're.
I'm more in the size of the crash that he'd have in that one to then walk away from it.
Arguably, the MX5s would probably go faster than these bastards.
Feel like we're still on cross purpose. I was thinking if he had this kind of crash he had on the F1 car in a Mazda 3X5, that might not be as walk awayable for him.
They have rock ages. Anyway, it's just it seems to be that we're relying on there to be some sort of major incident to make these races interesting, and I don't think that's what you want when it comes to a feeder series. What you want is good wheel-to-wheel action, and we are sometimes getting that, and sometimes getting to see the actual talent that these drivers have. But the rest of the time, it feels like we're just sort of sat there with bated breath, hoping that someone ends up in the kitty litter, which isn't racing. That's You've been framed. But the fact of the matter is, we've lost sight of actually talking about the race because it was genuinely that sort of disinteresting beyond
I'm
one
saying
moment.
because of the spin that Bianca had, we then get a bunched up field, which meant that instead of there being time for everyone to spread out as it would over, maybe the races with these cars need to be shorter because then they can just go for things quicker. It felt like we got more to the meat of the story because we were able to bunch them
We
back up
shaved
again. They
three
weren't able to
laps
run
off
away
of
from
it,
each
yeah.
other. Yeah. Which again is not obviously ideal how you want it, but it feels less of what you were saying there and more like it wasn't some big accident happening. It was just a smaller accident happening. I'm really trying hard here, but
That's the thing, we're trying hard here to actually review a racing series where it seems that not a great deal happens. And I think that is the overarching issue with this, is it has yet to actually wow us with anything. Yeah, we're getting some re really good racing moments, but none of it's
I
particularly
think it's
sticking.
quite telling that you go from the start of W Series to now, the cars being the consistent feature throughout here as to what the issue is. You had three, with the exception maybe of what the first season of W Series where Jamie had to fight a bit harder for the championship than she did for the other two, where you've had Jamie Chadwick dominant for 3 seasons in a row. Marta Garcia pretty much just did whatever she wanted to do last year and ran away with it. And this year, Abbie Pulling is just doing whatever she wants as well. And as impressive as Dorian is, she is still a rookie in her rookie season, and all the other experienced drivers have not been able to hold a torch to Abbie. So it's quite. That's why I'm quite looking forward to next year, just because I don't. Because a lot of the drivers who you'd expect to be back obviously can't be back because of the 2 year limit, which means that. Even if the cars aren't sorted, maybe we'll get something more interesting to talk about for the races because there won't be a clear-cut case of who's going to be able to. Maybe Dorian if she comes back, but again, there's
If
less of a guarantee there. And yeah, if big if. I
I
kind of
can't
hope
see her
she doesn't
wanting
in
to
some
spend the
ways
time
just
doing this.
because, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's also the problem because you'd want someone like her to come back to challenge for the title, but. Like you say, if there's not enough of an incentive for a car perspective, for what are you learning that you can gain to apply for your future career, then why are you doing this? And I think that's
Especially because Dorian Pratt
potentially
already
the
races at
overarching theme of the
Trekker.
episodes.
So there's no reason for her to do this next year when all she's going to risk winning is another go at Freca, which she's already doing. You're like,
Despite all this, then we'll
there
try
isn't a
and find some
prize worth
positives.
winning.
We'll find some positives. And we'll start off with winners, because we're going to winners and spinners. We'll find some winners. Ellie Mae, who impressed you over these two rounds?
I've gone for the wild card entries of Nina Gaidman and Ella Lloyd. I think to come in as a wild card and be on it throughout the weekend and finishing the points in both races, despite both of them getting penalties for various reasons, is impressive. I mean, as we said, Ella Lloyd's already been announced as a driver for next year, but I hope Gaidman is too, because both of them have outshone some of these drivers that we've seen in the series and in this series and W series. They've just outshone them.
I'm almost suspicious of you hacking my laptop and reading my notes and then taking them as your own, because it's more or less word for word what I've done exactly for what I was going to mention later with them.
Well, you annoyingly picked my winner. You also annoyingly picked my spinner. So...
This is fair, then. This is fair. But yeah, I'm going to echo everything you said there, and I think these two, as I kind of alluded to earlier, are the first sort of unknowns we've come across for F1 Academy as drivers from the last couple of years, and W Series as they all move on. This is kind of like the next generation of such, in a way. So yeah, fully agree with you there, and sorry, not sorry for beating you on choosing who you may have wanted to talk about. Jesse, who did you go for? You didn't steal any Mays.
I didn't steal, although Maya Vogue really sort of shored up what had been a relatively solid opener to the season. It's sort of, she's continued with what she'd been putting down, and she's been proving to be sort of the ideal number two driver, if you were to put this in Formula One terms, is the one that's always there ready to mop up when something goes wrong. And as often happens to be the case with Dorian Pain, there's often something a bit wrong. So, yeah, Virgo's been in the right place at the right time to really capitalize on that. And has actually sort of started, let me check the graph. I think she started just about clawing back into sort of title contention. 120 points against 150 for Dorian Pain, a long way off the 245 for Abby Pulling. But
so title contention for who? For second place.
Yeah. But yeah, the consistency has really paid sort of dividends for Vogue, and it's seeing her gain these results that she really needs. And yeah, she's sort of pulling away from Chloe Chambers and Nerea Marti behind. So yeah, it's been a good few rounds for Vogue, and I'm looking forward to see what she does next as well. Because of course she's done a few interesting junior series before. She's always had this Ferrari backing. It'll be nice to see where she moves on to. Because again, if this is what F1 Academy have been able to provide for her, I can't see her really being incentivized to stick around next season. Ferrari might just say, "Look, sod it, getting the Prema in F3. We'll back you through that instead."
Wouldn't be against it. As for myself, I've gone for Leah Block, because three top tens and two top fives, it's just darn good. And she's really coming into her own. It's nice to see that. She obviously struggled at the beginning of the season, but that was natural. She comes from a completely different racing background, and was gonna, sometimes you do just need a bit of time to come into it. I think we're so used to people either expecting or just seeing drivers come from all over the place, a little bit like Pan, where it doesn't matter what you stick them into, they're just going to be fast, and people then just expecting that of everyone who comes from a slightly different background to be like that, that if you're not like that, then you're suddenly terrible, when that's not the case at all. And it's been great for Leah to be able to develop in that way, and we've seen that over in Nitro Cross as well. She jumped up into the big main category for the season that's just been kicking off there, and she's not necessarily, she's not competing for podiums or wins, but she's, like she's doing in F1 Academy, she's learning a whole new kind of piece of kit and trying to figure out the best way to go about it. And the fact that she's able to hold her own against some of these more experienced drivers who've been doing this a lot longer is just really great to see, in the same way that she was racing Tanner Faust the last round and like going toe-to-toe with him. And when he's the guy that was kind of, he's essentially the godfather for her in a lot of ways, I think. I'm not sure if like officially or not, but essentially is in that role. It's really kind of fun to see that battle going on. So for her to then do the equivalent of F1 Academy as well, with how difficult these cars are, you got to love that.
She's showing what F1 Academy is all about, in the sense that we're giving women opportunity that may not get it outside of F1 Academy to get in a single-seater car. And we've seen throughout the season her hone her skills. I mean, she's still got a little bit to learn. You see her sometimes when they pan to her, especially when she's sort of fighting against another car. She's not quite doing sort of the smooth lines that she quite needs to do at the
minute.
She's still got the rallying in her, yeah. Which is fine when, you know, the car's moving around underneath you. She can handle that.
Like, but come on, do it.
And she's asking a bit too much of the car too quickly sometimes. But she's slowly getting better. And yeah, she would have been, she is my winner too, really.
Yeah, no,
I'd love to see her take the Mario Kart approach to Zandvoort, where you just kind of skid around all the banked corners and get that extra boost because you go off there.
Well, you sort of do it, wait for the sparks off the wheels to change, and then you get the little speed. That would be quite fun. Although I can imagine the Zandvoort banking to have like the mystery boxes on them as well, that you can actually see that in your mind.
Two-for-one deal there, I think.
Regardless, it's been a good couple of rounds for some winners. There's been some spinners that have emerged from it as well, and we often, I think,
you've been consistent with yours.
Have I picked her before?
Yeah,
you picked her for part one.
Clearly the spinner category, as we often refer to it in feeder series, is actually just drivers we want to see do better. It's not necessarily a case
you
of
just reading. Copy and pasted. I don't think you watched any of it.
No, I watched it all. I was just still disappointed in this driver, Tina Hausmann. I want better. I demand better. Prema have got a relatively consistent setup with their cars. I just want to see a bit more from you. Come on. That's all it really is at this point, is I'm just expecting some more. And you've got great coaching behind you from the likes of Jess Hawkins over at Aston Martin. They've got a driver academy
that's starting to build up.
And Lance Stroll, who called me fat in a dream the other night, and it was really upsetting. But don't ask why I was dreaming about Lance Stroll.
For the episode.
But anyway, yeah, Tina Hausmann, I'm waiting to see something special and something that sort of makes you go, that's why she's here. We've seen that now with Leah Block. We've seen that sort of step forward, that progression that makes you go, the gal's got it. I just haven't seen that with Tina Hausmann yet. And yeah, I'm waiting for that moment.
That's kind of how I chose mine as well. I've gone for Amna Alkabasi. I mean, it was...
It saddens me with her.
Yeah, and me. But it's, you know, been sloppy qualifying that's put her at the back for the last four races. And she hasn't, you know, granted you can't do much with these cars, she hasn't really done anything spectacular in the races either to get ahead of anyone. You know, and you look at her whole season this year, she's finished in the points three times and it's never been higher than eighth.
Yeah, it's really frustrating because I think we've seen her and Hamda racing really kind of like equal footing in other categories. And it's one of the things where she's obviously not forgotten how to drive. And it's weird to see. It's kind of, I think it's, you see this in other series, particularly F1, where Daniel Ricciardo is the perfect example of this, where you have a car change or regulation change and it just doesn't suit your style of driving. You just can't get what you want out of it anymore. And I think this is partly at least what Amna's suffering from. She had much better luck in other categories, which
she's
is interesting.
Much better luck last year.
Yeah, again, which is why it's so interesting, because you went, what changes did they make from last year to this year? And then you think, oh, you look at British F4 to UAE F4 and all the rest of it and think, how different are all those cars from each other really? But you think they must be to some extent, because otherwise it wouldn't just be, there wouldn't be such dramatic shifts there. And yeah, I'm hoping that these last couple of rounds, they're tracks that she's been to before, she's raced around, I'm pretty sure. So hopefully that gives her some kind of advantage so that you don't have to put her in your spinners category next time.
I hope so.
I mean, interesting though, we've completely forgot that she'd also tested in Formula E as well, so she might be making a return to the Formula E test circuit, which would be quite nice to see.
Not against that either.
No.
As for myself, I don't like doing this either. It's tough love again from me, but it's Bianca Bustamante. She's capable of more, and four non-top 10 finishes in a row isn't great. Her best being P11. And although admittedly the first race of Singapore wasn't all on her, as the team didn't call her into the pits and therefore meant she'd get a penalty, which would bug her race, it still just seemed a bit like not too surprising that she ended up there anyway and potentially would have fallen down the order as a result. And it's a shame, because I think this is a driver where when she first came onto the scene, we were all quite excited to see her from what we knew, and she delivered then, but then has had this weird, difficult patch. And like you're saying, Ellie Mae, it's awkward with these cars, but at the same time, we're seeing other drivers able to get the maximum out of them and deliver a bit, and it doesn't matter. You kind of got your pins and your pullings where it doesn't matter what we stick you in, you're going to be fast. But then you see someone like Leah come in, you go, well, You haven't been doing this film for more than 5 minutes. You managed to figure out how to get the best out of it. So what are you learning that these other drivers that have been doing this for longer, what are they missing?
It's yeah, just waiting to see those sort of moments of sparkle from drivers that sort of certify them as sort of what they're doing and what they're up to. And equally, this is the end of the line for Bianca in F1 Academy. It's starting to ask that question of where does she go next? And it's a bigger pool that she'll be moving into. How well is that talent going to rack up when we move into that bigger pool? If it is Formula E, if it is Frecca, if it is F3, that's going to be
There's
the real sort of
potential for an
testing.
episode between Brazil and Qatar, I think, where or Vegas rather, where we could, depending on what news we know, it's like, where are the drivers that can't come back next year? Where are they going? And who do we think is going to be in F1 Academy next year? Because that's really going to stretch our knowledge on how many young drivers that we haven't heard of do we know. But we'll give
Similar
ourselves
to
a
what
bit
we
of time
do
now.
with that sort of F2 and F3, the sort of predict where they'll end up sort of thing, but predict who will
Yes.
end up in F1 Academy more so.
I think she's lucky that she's got McLaren backing.
Yes, definitely. But again, we've seen that with, I mean, not necessarily McLaren, but with, well, a little bit with McLaren, but with other teams where just because you're part of their driver academy doesn't mean we won't just chop you at the same time. Williams being the most recent interesting one for that one. Other drivers worth mention, I will just say that one quickly for myself because it won't take long because Ellie Mae did take all of my points already, which is fair enough because I stole all of hers, so this is all fair. But just to reiterate the wild card entries again, they were just phenomenal. I hope that whoever we get for the last two rounds can live up to their high expectations.
Yeah, the feeder seat, the sort of wild cards in this have certainly in the few past two rounds have set a high bar. And what have we got left to round out the F1 Academy season on? I can't remember off the top of my head what we've got left. Qatar and Abu Dhabi. Qatar certainly a challenging circuit. If you're a wild card that comes in here and scores points, I think people are going to be sitting up, and I think it's going to be not until we've finished Abu Dhabi and then some that we see teams filling out the rest of their slots, because there's at least another two wildcard drivers that are going to be quite impressive if they're able to score some points in Qatar.
Who've you got then in your stead for other drivers worth mentioning, Jesse?
Chloe Chambers. I think obviously we had that brilliant sort of rack of points from her early on in the season. She's very much carried that on as well as it's moved on. So it's keeping her in touch with that sort of Maya Vogue sort of just about in that fight for sort of P3 in the championship, which is sort of where you want to be with F1 Academy, because of course the top three are the ones that are most likely to move on to go and do something regardless of how many years they've been in the series. So if she's in touch with that area, she's been obviously signed on for next year, now moving over to Ford. So there's this sort of, if you're getting up there and fighting around that point, you're going to have these better races. You're going to learn more from it. You're going to develop more, and you're also going to be more of a sort of promising talent on the big screen. So, worth a mention and worth one to keep an eye on, I think, as things move forward.
I've
Think
gone
back that.
for Hamda Al-Qubaisi for kind of what I said earlier, in that if there's a battle on track, she's usually involved and she's usually overtaking. And I think the other person that we haven't mentioned that has obviously dominated, Abbie Pulling.
Yeah,
Sort
no,
of
it's fair
without
enough
men
to mention Pulling there.
yeah, goes
People are just
without
so
saying,
used to
really.
her.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're just so used to her doing that it's kind of like we're not mentioning you, it's just you're a given, like you say, Jesse. But yeah, Hamda has been great to see, and it's been interesting, like you're talking about with Amna before, the stark contrast in the inter sister rivalry there that's been going on, because you can bet your bottom dollar behind closed doors that Hamda's probably rubbing that a little bit in Amna's face and going, Roger was the better driver.
Yeah, it's probably settling a few arguments for them, which is it's going to be an interesting one. Bear in mind their brother as well also races in Middle East in F4 as well. So it's a and their dad races a few bits and pieces here and there. So it's a very competitive household. I think
There's a fun charity event at some point to determine who's got the fastest in that family.
dinner table talks must be exciting. Anyway, that's sort of we'll have a quick recap of the constructor standings. Abbie Pulling obviously still leads 245 points. Dorian Pan 150 points in second, and Maya Vogue
Only 95 points
120.
ahead.
I
Oh.
can you
Which
could
makes
you
me think,
call
how
that
has she not
back?
been declared
There must still be a way of getting it back. I can't remember the scoring system for F1 Academy, unless you get.
I think it's F1 points for each race. So I guess race, technically, yeah. If she doesn't score anything, then it's doable.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose that, 100 points if Dorian Pan.
Mm. Dorian Pan needs to win all of them and have Abby get no more than 5. And even if she does, she still wins on countback.
Yeah, for both races, the top 10 classified drivers will be awarded 25, 18, 15, and so on points, plus one for fastest lap. And obviously, if you get pole, you get 2 points for both, if you're qualifying on pole in both races. So, yeah.
This feels very IndyCar.
She's got 106 points available to get in the best case scenario, and she's, what did we say, 90 or so shy. So
95 points, yeah.
Technically, Dorian Pang could still do this. She's the only driver that can dethrone Abby Pulling, and it'd be one hell of a final.
I thought
two
I was optimistic seeing Will Power try and get P1 back up for Alex Palou. Never mind, Jesse trying to go one better.
It's a big points gap to overhaul. We'll see what happens. Nina Gaidman, P13. Ella Lloyd, P17. Our wild cards from the past two rounds. Doing pretty well, to be fair. And, I mean, we hope to see some firecrackers come in for the final two rounds. If we don't, they have pretty solid finishing positions, especially Nina Gaidman in P13. Constructors-wise, Prema Racing, 287 points. Rodin Motorsport, 280 points. Campos Racing, 228. ART Grand Prix 115, MP Motorsport 109. So despite Abby Pulling's best efforts at Rhoda, 280 points, Prema with Pan and Virg in there, plus Houseman, 287, just edging it out at the top end there. But
Do you like that Abby Pulling is 245 of those 280 points though?
Who else is in that Rodin team? Because they should be the real spinners of this at this point, certainly by season's end.
Jesse's really hoping that Tina Houseman's in that team.
No, she's not. She's in Prema. I know that. Let's see.
Where am I? Jess Edgar, is it?
F1 Academy 2024. Who is in that Rodin team? Lola Lovenfoss and Jess Edgar. So, yeah.
I will point this out one last thing then. If we're wanting a spinner, your mentioning of Lola Lovenfoss there was the first time I've remembered about her in about 4 months. So I think that probably says enough that it needs to say, given it's her second season.
I was tempted to put her as my spinner, to be honest. It's kind of the same as Amna. It's kind of, I want
more. You chose Amna though, because she's not going to drive into you.
And I want Charlotte Tilbury stuff.
You're just being.
That's nice, right. I don't sponsors. Need that.
That's yeah. No, I mean, let's be honest. It's sort of like if you're in F2 and F3, if you're finishing behind the people that have only done a few races, that's a bit telling of your season. And Lovenfoss, Amna, and Emily de Hirsch currently sat behind Nina Gaidman. It's not great.
It's not ideal.
No, you've had an entire season to date, and you're at least Lovenfoss is tied with Gaidman, but technically actually behind her because of Gaidman's fourth place in Zandvoort, which is really doing a lot of heavy lifting for her there.
However, we do have Qatar and Abu Dhabi still to come for the rest of this season, and we'll have a review for both those rounds after the season will be finished, and possibly even a season review, which may be quite short depending on how the racing goes. So, you know, anything can still happen. We're always optimistic here, or we try to be at the very least. So we'd be interesting to see who the wildcard drivers are for those two races, because in theory you get someone from the countries that it's being boosted in. So it'd be interesting to see what happens there, and if not, who else might be a wildcard driver. So there's potential, but in terms of this episode, that is all we've got time for. Be sure to have liked, subscribe, and got notifications turned on so don't miss any of our Formula 1 and Feeder Series content. We'll be back with a bit more soon because F1 is actually back this weekend. So there'll be an Austin review coming out soon, maybe even already by the time you listen to this. And then we're into a triple header with Austin, Mexico, and Brazil. So we're going to be busy, busy, busy. Any other notes from you two before we sign off?
No, if you want more from me, I'm on the internet, social media and all that, at Jesse on Cars, plus writing for Classic Car Weekly. Pick up the latest issue. It's full of good stuff. Lots of previews for the NEC Classic Motor Show. Worth doing.
And dreaming about Lance Stroll.
But he's bullying me in my dreams, so it's not that sort of a dream, really. unless that's your sort
How
of thing.
dire is your situation when you're getting bullied by Lance
I
Stroll?
don't know. Clearly, I need to sort of have a healthier
You need
pre-bedtime
help.
routine. Yeah, I need to see someone about this because this I can't go on like this, man.
Ellie Mae, where can people find you? You do have stuff to promote
Are you being
before you
bullied by
forget.
Lance Stroll in your dreams?
No, she's got standards for her buddies.
No, I have had dreams about the Strolls. I've had dreams that they've lived next door to me for some reason.
Somehow that's funnier than Lance Stroll calling me fat. I don't know why.
Called a coping mechanism.
I think it's because the person like opposite but to the side is called Lance, so it merged into
Is
just
he good at cycling?
oh he's dead, so
Oh. So he
age.
doesn't really live across and to the side of you anymore, does
No,
he?
not
Or
anymore. No, not anymore.
what depends, is there a graveyard over and to the side?
No, but at the time I had the dream, he was alive.
And she thought, no, I can't dream about the straws anymore. I must murder him.
Anyway,
But yeah,
we can any
anyway.
more Ellie Mae
Yes,
content.
we were trying to promote Ellie Mae here, weren't we? We apologize.
It's kind of an eventful week, I think, for me. I have got stuff out from Castle Coombe, which was exceptionally soggy, but it didn't make for some bad race pictures. So maybe check that out. I don't know if you want. You don't
She's so
have
good
to.
at selling herself, isn't she?
I'm not forcing you to do it, but if you'd like to do it.
She's not
It's
holding you
like
at
one of those
gunpoint.
reverse sales techniques where she pretends not to make a big deal out of it and gets people more interested that way.
Yeah,
It's
fine. We won't give you double glazing. It's okay. Yeah. You go, actually, no, I want the double glazing now. You go, Timo, what are you up to?
all things these days. I've got an IndyCar season review out
No,
soon.
you
I need
haven't
to edit
mentioned
that.
it.
No, I know. I've been all on about Indy Next. Completely different kettle of fish altogether. But away from that, I've also got an interview with Turkish rally co-driver Epik Özdemir out on Instagram, so do go and check that out as well. If you aren't into IndyCar, you're going to be boring. And yeah, go and check that out. So that's me. I think that's it from the three of us, though. So thank you very much for listening, and we will see you again soon.